This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 19, 2026 in Belle Rive, Illinois.
Good morning, everyone. Just want to thank AF for putting this on. I think this can be a day of learning. It has been for me already in preparing for this day. So God has many ways for us to learn, and this is one good way, I think, that he's provided through AF. And just want to thank the committee for getting this set up and planned, and look forward to learning more today. So, just ask that I appreciated the prayer, and just ask that you would continue doing that for me and for the rest of the speakers and the committee, so that God's name can be glorified today. I'd like to start with my topic. Get on that right away. I know we're on a timeline, so I want to try to use it in a good way. So let's keep praying for each other. Glad for everybody that's here. It's good to see a crowd come together to learn. Psalms 118:24 says, "This is the day that the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it." So let's rejoice. God has done so much for us, especially for Jesus, that was willing to come and give his life for our sins. So my topic was is maintaining Christian identity in your business. And I found that interesting, to study on this. It was good for me to study, you know, our identity. What really is that? Few things are as personal. Few things are as personal to us as our identity. And if we, you know, we are identified by something. And hopefully, you know, our identity is clear to the people around us that Christ is living in within us, that we have his spirit with us. But we are human, and it's something that I find that we have to keep working on to maintain that Christian identity. And our identity should be a ministry. As we go through this, let's remember that we're called, whether we're, you know, as a child of God. It doesn't matter if we're a minister, if we're a business owner, or whoever we are. If God is part of our, you know, if we accept Christ as our Savior, we then are called to a ministry, to share that light, that life that he's given us, that we can reflect that as was mentioned in the prayer. So who does the public we work with identify us with? And I just put three things down. Jesus, hopefully that's the answer for all of us. Selfish me, you know, that doesn't sound very good. But Satan, if we're to be identified with Satan, you know, let's hope that would never happen with anybody here. That would not be good at all. The next one here is when I was thinking about, you know, our identity, I thought of this verse or when Peter and John were, the church was young there, and they were preaching. Acts 4:13 says, "Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, they perceived that they were ignorant men. They marveled that they had knowledge. They marveled, and they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus." You know, there was something, they weren't learned, or they didn't have a lot of knowledge. Peter was a fisherman, and I don't think they had a lot of education, but the scribes, the Pharisees, they could tell that there was something different about these men and that they had been with Jesus. So their identity was easy to notice. So again, who does the public we work with Identify us. Ernest Sellers penned it very well. I think we're very familiar with this song. Would men know that you've been with Jesus? Can men tell? Can they feel his presence near? As you with them joy and labor, as with them you journey here? Would men know by word and action in the small things of this life? You know, it's often in the small things. It's not necessarily the big things that stand out as much, but it's often the small things, the day-to-day things, in the daily round of duty, in the midst of toil and strife. What about when things go wrong or when things mess up? Can men still tell that we've been with Jesus? Inasmuch as unto others ye have done these things, said he, unto me ye did this service, the service, witness that all men may see. Not by word of lip full often is the world convinced of truth, but in the deed of loving service from the heart brings fullest proof. You know, do we have that proof? I think we do. I think we're a group of people that are striving to do this, or we wouldn't be here today. I really believe that's the way we are. But we need to be reminded and encouraged. Can men tell, the chorus goes, can men tell that you love Jesus? Can they really tell? Is there a question? Is there a gray area? Or is it very plain? Can they by your life and mine see in daily walk and action that we have his life divine? Proverbs 10:11 says, even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. You know, even children, and I often think, I've said this often already, that I don't think God's the one that gave us our personality. God has never given a personality that's not good. It's just when we let that selfish nature have its way, you know, sometimes we hear there was a clash in personalities, and maybe that's true in a way. But when God is with us, when God's in that person's life, you know, the personality is good. There are passive personalities. There's aggressive personalities, but each one has its weaknesses. And wherever we are, you know, with our personalities, we're still going to be known by if Jesus is with us or not. So we carefully guard public perception because we recognize the impact it affects on our success. So in our businesses, we know that if we want our business to flourish, we have to do a good service. We have to we just know that if we don't take care of the identity. You know, in these days with the modern, with the technology, I can't think of the word, with social media is what I was trying to say. You know, things can go wrong really fast. Things can get posted on our about us that can be very damaging. So we do well to guard our public perception, but should it be because of financial success? I think we need to think about that. I think being a witness is much more important than the financial success that it brings if we do well with our preserving our identity with Christ. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, for the love of money. Let's remember, it's the love of money. It's not necessarily money, but it's the love of money. Is that something that we struggle with? I think if we're human, I think that's very natural for us. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some have coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. You know, I think we could go down the line and everybody would have a different scenario to share of somebody or a situation that the love of money caused a lot of damage. Money creates power. A quote that I heard, and I couldn't find it exactly, but I think it was something like this: if you want a man to fail, give him money and give him power. And that's that's the carnal man. You know, the carnal man is prone to let those things subtly erode the values that we maybe once had. So let's be careful. As God blesses our businesses, as God blesses us with financial gain, let's be careful that we don't let that love of money, get the best of us. And let's just be aware that this love of money or other ways that we lose our identity with Christ, it often comes very gradual. So gradual, so slow that we maybe don't realize it. And I think today, you know, by getting together and sharing together, that's a way that we can revive that desire that I think we all have. How do we display to those with whom we interact within the business world that our identity as a follower of Christ is our highest priority? Again, I'm kind of repeating myself. Our business should be a ministry. You know, we should be concerned that our business is a ministry. So what do the people that we deal with say about us? And I've got different things that I listed, like our lenders. Unfortunately, you know, lending is something that we, a lot of us, have to do. It costs a lot of money to be in business, and I'm sure that maybe there's people here today that have figured out how to do it without lending, without having to borrow money. But a lot of us have to borrow money to do business. Do we keep our commitments? Are we concerned about our commitments? If we borrow money, are we willing to work with the person that lends us the money, the bank or the individual? Are we concerned about that? Are our payments made on time? If the unforeseen comes up, are we willing to communicate, make satisfaction? You know, it's important. And I could give a little story of something that happened in our business several years ago. We had a customer that was slow in paying sometimes, and it was kind of a continual thing that we had to work with. And we'd have to make a call occasionally and ask, you know, are you, do you have, what do you have in mind on this invoice? And so one time there was an invoice that was kind of dragging on. So I called the customer and I asked him, I said, we have this invoice here. And I just kind of brought it up. And she said, oh yes, I should have called you. She said, we wanted to go on vacation and we decided to use that money for vacation, and we'll try to get you paid as soon as we can. You know, I'll let you decide. I think that's just not the Christian way of taking care of our commitments. Do our financial statements show integrity? I think we'd be surprised what a banker can figure out about his clients. I think it's just, you know, they see the backside of us, you might say. They see the side of us sometimes, or they'll see the positive. They you know, it's a wonderful way to witness, but let's just be careful with that. But as we fill out those financial statements, you know, we can make them look good. But a banker that's been in business for a while, or a loan officer, I think they can see through that pretty quickly. They're used to that. So let's be careful that we don't overstate our you know, we might need more collateral. So we think, well, we'll take this to the top. Let's just be careful with that. Let's make sure that we're using integrity in how we fill those out. Do we understand that we as the borrower are servant to the lender, as stated in Proverbs 22:7? Do we communicate and get approval before selling something that they have a lien on? That's something that I talked to my banker, to the loan officer. I asked him, I wanted to make sure that this is correct. But if we have if there's a lien, like often, like for a line of credit or for a loan, they might have a lien, they'll take a lien out on maybe equipment or certain things that maybe we kind of forget about it. You know, we forget about it, that they took a lien out on this piece of equipment. And so we decide we want to upgrade this piece of equipment, and we decide to sell it and replace it with something newer. By law, if there's a lien on that piece of equipment, if we sell it, and they have to, they come after the money, by law, they can go to that person and just take it, and that person is out of his whatever he was buying from us. So let's be careful that we communicate that with the bank. Usually they're very good. I've found that they're very good to just say, oh, it's fine. We'll take care of it. We'll move this over to the other piece of equipment, and it's usually not a problem, but it takes communication. And there's so many ways like that we can just, instead of making them come to us, we can take care of that. We can take care of that. And while we're doing that, we can share Christ that's within us. Because not everybody, you know, not everybody cares. And Christ, God, if we have God in our life, care is just something that comes with that, with God's Spirit. Do we have and show appreciation for them? Do we take time to just thank them for helping us? Because without them, you know, we couldn't exist. There's many ways like that we can be a witness. Our vendors. Again, do we keep our commitments? Do we pay on time? That's something that I think we as Anabaptist people, we're thrifty. We're, you know, but sometimes we take it too far. We think that everybody else should understand. Let's be careful about that. Let's take care of our commitments. If something unforeseen comes up, do we make satisfaction? You know, sometimes things do go wrong. Somebody doesn't pay, or somebody's check bounces, and we were depending on that, and we're just in a bind for right then. Usually it can be worked out, but let's communicate. Another thing that I think that we as Anabaptist people, as plain people, you know, do we unreasonably barter or Jew? And I've been guilty of this, and I want to just say, I mean, I'm talking to you today, you know, speaking to you from failures that I've made. So it's not that I get these things done. You know, I've felt that I've bartered too hard. I've just bartered too hard. But do we barter or Jew them down? We're just determined that we're going to get that best price. And do we understand how that can dim the light that we're supposed to be? So let's be careful. I don't think it's wrong to make somebody an offer. Sometimes somebody has that, they'll say, you know, this is what we want for this piece, but we'll take an offer, and it's not wrong. But let's be careful that we don't dim that light that God wants us to be. Jesus' own word, to our customers. So we have customers. You know, a business wouldn't be a business without customers. How do we take care of our customers? Are we looking to get every dollar that we possibly can? Are we thinking about our ministry? Are we thinking about the witness that God wants us to be? How do we look at that? Jesus' own words in Luke 6:38, it says, "Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom, for with the same measure that ye meet, withal it shall be measured to you again." So I think we can see Jesus had this was his own words. And I've just found, you know, when we do that, when we're willing to give somebody the value of what they're buying, we make sure that the deal is good. It just, that has a way of coming around. And it's not that we want to do this for the sake of gain in the end. It's just that is what God's way really is giving men, you know, where when they leave, or whatever we're doing, the service that we're doing, or the goods that they're purchasing, that they go away from there feeling good about it. And that's a wonderful way that we can witness. So we live in a time that it is very possible to take advantage of lucrative market conditions in a way that also can dim our ministry very quickly. And I think this is something the committee was hoping, I think, to maybe discuss this a little bit, or that I would speak on this a little bit. And I don't know, you know, I don't have a really big amount to give on this, but and I try to think, and I asked some questions, and I don't know that I feel like I kind of struck out on this. I didn't get a lot of information back. Your minds can probably go and fill in those blanks, but we live in a time right now, you know, since COVID, there's a lot of opportunities, I should say. There's a lot of opportunities in business today because of the way things went in during COVID-19 times. But let's just be careful that we're not taking advantage of that. You know, we can take advantage in a way that it creates an opportunity. But just because there's not much competition, or, you know, that doesn't give us a right, or that doesn't, you know, I think you get what we're saying. Maybe we can talk about a couple things yet. Let's be sure that it's ethical. The path that we're taking is ethical. The way that we charge is reasonable. In the past, like, you know, if there's competition, the pricing will keep us. In other words, if we're so high and there's somebody else over here doing the same thing, you know, they're not going to pay our price. But if there's nobody else really doing it, or if there's not many people doing it, or everybody's so far behind, you know, that sometimes changes things. So is it still true when competition lacks in the market and things really get out of whack with reality? Is this still true that we can charge whatever? When some customers are able and willing to pay exorbitant prices, should we just assume that everyone else can pay higher rates too? Is the sky the only limit that we have? You know, I hope it's not that way. I hope we're reasonable. I don't think anybody's here that's interested in taking advantage of his fellow person, but because of, you know, the humanity that we're born with, because of that carnal nature, we have that tendency. You know, we have the golden rule. Jesus gave the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I think that'll help us a lot. You know, if we make that business deal, you know, are we thinking just about ourselves? Are we thinking just about the selfish me? Are we listening to what Satan is, you know, whispering in our ear? Or are we really concerned that the deal that we're making is also being a witness for Christ? I think that's something we want to remember. A business to exist must charge for services or good, but does well to remember that we need good Christian ethical guidelines to determine acceptable margins. You know, and I don't want to leave the light today. I don't want anybody to go home and feel guilty to charge. You know, sometimes you could ask my boys, my family, and they could tell you, but sometimes I have a hard time just charging. Like, we do some excavating, a little bit of excavating work, and sometimes we'll do a job. There's a job that we haven't charged for right now. We just went and did a little bit of work. It really wasn't that much. It's just sometimes hard to just, you know, it sounds expensive for not more than we did, you know, to charge. But we can't exist if we don't charge. So we don't need to feel guilty. That's not why what I'm talking about here today. It's just that, and we'll talk about a couple of illustrations in researching this. I had a couple, and I don't know names, there was no names given, but I have a couple illustrations that to me sound pretty far out of line, and hopefully that'll give us an idea what we're talking about. Margins will greatly vary depending on services or goods involved. So, you know, in our business, we do jams and jellies. Those have a bigger margin, but then we do a lot of distributing of jars and caps, and those margins are very small. Especially on a truckload, or especially, so it's not safe to say that, you know, I can't stand here and say that your margin shouldn't go over 50%, or shouldn't go over 10%, or shouldn't go over whatever. It depends what our services are and what we're doing. But I think we all know that, I think you know what I'm trying to say. Sometimes we may be uncertain how to bid a job and end up bidding it way too high. How beautiful that can be to go back with a reworked price that saves the customer money while ministering to the person at the same time. And I don't know how often that would happen. We don't do a lot of jobs that we bid the job. But you know, I was just thinking about this and asking different people, and this is something that came up, was just imagine, you know, we make somebody a quote. We bid a job, and it's we really are not sure. So we bid it pretty high to be safe, and we ended up, it just goes so different than what we had planned. You know, wouldn't that be a nice way? I don't know that I've ever done it. I don't remember that I've ever done it, but I mean, I just think that would be a nice way. If there is room there, if there's room there, we could go back and say, this just went so much better. We could still make good money. It's not wrong to make money. But we could go back to this person and say, I just don't feel right. I think we just overshot here a little bit. And I just think that would be a good way to show Christ in our work. What about a job that we happened to bid too low? Anybody done that? Has anybody done that before? We end up, we've got this sinking feeling that we just didn't bid this one right. You know, are we people of our word? Can they still see Christ even with, you know, losing some money? I just don't think. In studying for this topic, it just brought out to me, how often I go to work. And I'm not even thinking about being a witness. I'm just thinking about what has to get done. And the stress level might be a little high. Yesterday we had a full day planned. And of course I had this topping on my mind. And yesterday morning my stomach was churning. And I told the others there, I said, I don't know why I said yes when they asked for this topic. Why did I say yes? This is just, you know, out of my comfort zone. And we started making we were working on running our batch of jelly for the day, and this vehicle drives in, and we didn't know who it was, but for some reason, the way he pulled up there, and I had this sinking feeling that this might not, but anyway, ended up being an auditor, an unannounced auditor that came in for the food safety, and the stress went from wherever it was, it wasn't maybe too high, but it went really high, and you know, the rest of the day, but later it was around lunchtime or sometime around lunchtime or right after lunch, it hit me all of a sudden that, you know, I forgot all about this meeting. The churning in my stomach just quit. You know, we get under stress. Unfortunately, there's stress, and it's at those times when I fail the most often. When the stress goes up and somebody calls or somebody comes and, you know, let's just remember that we have a lot of opportunity to share Christ to the people around us just by everyday things. As I mentioned, when I was given a couple instances as follows to exemplify, and I'm giving those to exemplify kind of what I think that the committee had in mind when they asked me for this topic. And to protect identity, numbers and details may not be exact. I just, they're not exact. But the first illustration here is a contractor gets a call from a lady who wants repairs to her house. He's a beginner, but senses she is willing to pay whatever he asks. So, yeah, and he charges $5,000 for a job. He makes a bid for doing this job, whatever it was. I don't even know what it was. But he did this bid of $5,000 for a job they end up doing in one day with two people and has less than $500 in materials and he has less than $2,000 invested in tools. Do we get that picture? I think that's pretty clear. I thought that was, you know, to me that was, yeah, I was kind of shocked, I guess, to say the least. But to me that would have been a wonderful bid to go back and say, you know what, I just overshot this. I didn't mean, it was just different. I don't have a lot of experience. I mean, I can we imagine what that would do to an outsider? I think that would be wonderful. But what about this lady might be a, you know, maybe she's a widow, maybe she's a single mother, and her son comes in from out of town, comes in from Chicago. And she says, yeah, look at this, whatever was done. Oh, really? So what did you pay for it? Oh, I paid $5,000. You know, and he knows better. So he's like, and who did it for you? Well, it was the Amish person or the Mennonite person, whatever. I think that's a good way to dim that light. So whose identity do we see in this illustration, and what is that doing to our ministry? I think we can see that really clearly. The other illustration is very similar. Another illustration, again, I don't know who this was. This was just given. This was another illustration that was given. A church brother asked a young man to help finish a small construction job for himself that he had already started, and also provided help for finishing. The young man supplied some limited amount of tools and equipment, works less than one full day, and charges $6,500 for his labor. And I don't know, you know, I don't know, did they work something out? I don't know if the money was actually exchanged. I really don't know. But that was, I guess, what the way that he had, somehow he figured, you know, that for his labor. So I think we can see that this is beyond margins that I think we should shoot for. Yeah, and again, whose identity do we see in this illustration? I think we all know that this would be a questionable. Well, it just wouldn't be a witness at all, I guess. It wouldn't be questionable. Selfish me is something that just wants to pop up in our lives, or at least for me. You know, we just forget, and we have to be reminded again and again. The love of money is the big driver in these two illustrations, not the love of God flowing through us to those who. Not the love of God flowing through us to those we serve, you know, and that's our calling, is to let God's love, as we receive it, that it flows to the people around us. But reality is that even if we abide with margins that bring glory to God, are living in times that increase, wealth is likely to come our way. As a whole, there is a demand for our services and goods. And I think we've experienced that in our business, and I hear that a lot. A lot of people, if you ask them, you know, are you staying busy? And they're like, we are too busy. We are just too busy. So, you know, we live in times where, I'm not saying that everybody is becoming wealthy. I'm just saying that we live in times where it's fairly easy to make a living. And how do we deal with the increase, the blessings that God gives us? Deuteronomy 8:18 says, "But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth." Let's just remember that everything that we have is a gift from God. And I know that's a little bit of a controversy sometimes, because we know that God, or no, let me back that up. I'm sorry. We know that wealth comes to people that don't even believe in God. So, and I've got more on that in a little bit. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm just saying, you know, it's not saying that if God blesses us, or if we're blessed with wealth, that it is necessarily because we're living right. That's not at all. But still, everything that we have, including our breath, the life that we have, everything that we have is a gift of God. Let's remember that. Ecclesiastes 5:19 says, "Every man to whom God hath given riches and wealth, every man to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him the power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor, this is a gift of God." Let's remember, it's a gift. And God entrusts this to us and expects that we use it wisely in his kingdom to bring honor and glory to him. We can see by this that all we have in our possession is a gift from God, but not a sign of our relationship with God. We've already gone over that. Sometimes God chooses hardships for us. This is also a sign that we are not out of God's grace. You know, sometimes we have backsets. We deal with, like, we bid the job too low. I was trying to think just now. I can't give all the details, but somebody was telling me recently, and I don't know where I heard that, but it was a big job that was, I forget how it all went, but the contractor, the one that did the job, ended up losing a lot of money. It took a long time for him to regain what he lost. You know, sometimes God lets hardships come our way, and that's another way. The way that we deal with that is a is is a is is a good way for God. You know, God might have a purpose in how we respond to that. You know, and that brings, allows us to witness. 1 Timothy 6:9, but they that will be rich, that will be, did we catch that? That will be rich, fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. So if God blesses us with wealth, he also blesses us with a great responsibility in this. We can use this in maintaining our Christian identity in how we use it. So let's just remember that the blessings that God gives us, you know, he also expects, you know, with every blessing, there's a responsibility. So let's use it wisely. Ephesians 4:28, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. You know, are we working to increase our wealth? Are we working to we're just going after that last dollar for our own good? Or do we really have a heart? Do we have a heart to minister with our businesses? Do we have a heart for the people that don't have this opportunity, that don't have the blessings that God has blessed us with? Are we interested in that? Or is it just, you know, what are we thinking as we go through our day-to-day labors? What do our children see in us parents? Do they see measures taken that they can safely follow? What do they see in our life? Is it safe for them to follow? Are we, as God increases our wealth, you know, and we live in times when that happens a lot. You know, you see businesses that flourish and the younger generation comes on. Are we living that out in a way that our children, that it's safe for them to pick up and go on? You know, and often our children, they often try to start off where we left off, if I'm saying that correctly. I think as we utilize the blessings that God shares with us, let's remember that our children are watching and that we have a wonderful opportunity to help them, to guide them in a safe direction. Whose identity do they see in us? Who knows us better than our children? And where is a greater mission? Where's a greater mission responsibility than our own children? The ones that God entrusted to us. Do we realize that responsibility? And how the little things makes a difference. Unspoken words, you know, just the way we handle things, how that can make a difference in our children. Few things are as personal to us as our identity. There are few things that are as personal to us as our identity. Our identity should create a ministry. You know, our identity, I can't say it anymore. Our identity is just, you know, it should be a ministry because of God living in us. Let's take care of it for God's glory. Proverbs 22:1, a good name is to be chosen. I think I missed part of that. A good name to be chosen is to be chosen than great riches. It's better for a good name than great riches and loving favor rather than silver and gold. You know, which would we rather be known for? And there's a little story. I think that's the end of my slides. But there's a little story that I tried to find it this morning and I wasn't successful. But there's this story about this man and his wife. And probably many of you have read it and can say it better than I. But I'll share the principle of it. But they had this business that they started, and they wanted to give a certain portion. And I don't remember what that portion was to the Lord. So they gave this portion to the Lord, and their business kept doing well. And as the years went on, they kept giving more. Every so often, they would talk about this and say, you know, we just are keeping too much for ourselves still. So they gave a little bit more and more. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, at the last, does anybody know the story that I'm referring to? I think at the last it was like, was it 90%? I think it was around 90% that they were giving to the Lord. they were keeping 10% of what their business made for themselves. And when they passed away, I'm not sure which one it was. Was it the banker? I think it was the banker that approached one of the children and said, "Do you realize what your parents..." did, and I can't put that all together, but it just ended up with saying that the banker and the deacon were the only two people that knew what that couple gave. And the Lord, of course, the Lord knew. You know, is that how we'd like to be known? Or would we rather be known that we've created this big business and this big wealth, and you know, we're gonna be known by the way we are, by the way we live. So we have a wonderful opportunity today to take it to heart and live it out. And I have to say, one thing I almost forgot to say, you know, we make mistakes. We make mistakes. There's times when stress is high. It wasn't too long ago that I was in that situation. The stress was high. The load was big. And I didn't say a bad word. It was just my tone of voice. And I hung up from that call, and I was like, I knew immediately that this was wrong. You know, I don't know if they caught it or not, but I just knew it was wrong. So it probably went 20 minutes or so, and I just picked up the phone. I called that person again, and I said, "I'm sorry. And I'm going to tell you, something happened that you know, I had to dig deeper," I guess you'd say. I called, and I apologized to that person, and then she said, "I thought it sounded like your stress was a little high." She never said that what she did was not the best thing. You know, and I made a mistake by letting the pressure get the best of me. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, I would still say today that what she did, what she said wasn't good either. But she recognized that I had done wrong, but she didn't offer that she had done anything wrong. So I had to... And everything was okay. I didn't say anything, or I just said it. I just wanted to say this. I wanted to apologize, and she thanked me for it, and it was good. I felt okay, except that. But a couple quotes that I found that I want to leave as a closing: try not to become a man of success, rather, become a man of value. Try not to become a man of success, rather, become a man of value. And then one more: light another person's candle by your own, and you will not lose any of the brilliancy by what the other gains. And that's just what I find. We can light somebody else's candle, and we don't lose anything by it. That's all I have. I just want to thank you for your prayers and turn the time over to the committee.